We made it to Friday. Never a question, but what was it? It felt like a quick week. All of a sudden it was Friday. Time flies when you're having fun, Justin.
Quick week, eh? I don't know if it was a quick week.
You're hurting.
I was hurting for a little bit at the start of the week. Kind of in my feelings a little bit about my Houston Astros.
Not
and
anymore.
And now I'm a little disappointed we didn't get any Astros highlights sound spliced into that opening.
I told Josh, don't you dare play any Astros home run music.
It has to be a team thing.
Yeah. I'm in control with the intro clips here.
Yes, you are.
You know what I was just thinking when we played Ingloria? Maybe we've cursed the St. Louis Blues playing the song. They're trash.
Or me trying to bet them has cursed them.
Yeah, your streak has ended.
We also found out which baseball force was more powerful last night. My gambling record versus Justin Verlander's World Series record. Mm. The only thing that could straighten him out was me thinking that he could give up some runs in over a five-inning outing.
Started good, though.
It did start
good. It's like, here, I'm going to smash this.
You kind of jinxed it, too.
Like I jinxed it.
Leadoff triple, and we already cashed it.
It was 1-1 at the end of the first inning, was it not?
It was like any other baseball bet for me, where it's just like, oh, that should obviously win, and it doesn't.
Excruciating.
Anyway.
It's Friday morning. If you're in the city of Toronto, it's a creepy little fog out there again. I walk to work, but you drive, and I'm a little concerned about your whereabouts sometimes.
So, I mean, it's bad.
You got high beams on that thing?
No, you're not supposed to use high beams in the
fog. What are you supposed to use?
Oh, the high beams make it work.
Fog lights, right?
I don't think fog lights is a thing on cars, is it?
Is it not?
we're probably going to have to rely on the text
line. Lights that are lower, like you have the regular lights, but you have the lights that are like lower on the car. Oh, God. You know how many people are going to text in right now?
I could be way wrong here.
There's a lot of car junkies listening.
Anyway, I think it's just you use the regular lights because the high beams create more of a distraction or less of a visual. Anyway, it's relentlessly foggy.
It's spooky.
It's like, yeah, it's Halloween is just continuing. You get the fake Halloween, like the fake smoke that's trying to make, you know, Halloween haunt or whatever. And now it's just the natural stuff won't go away. I don't mind it, though. Everyone slows down a little bit on the way.
Oh, you're a nervous driver.
I wouldn't say I'm a nervous driver, but I'm not a maniac out there.
You've got like 12 car lengths.
I'd prefer to not flip my car on the way in.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably for the best. Yeah. You can just, if you do that, just call in and you do the show from the side of the highway.
Oh, yeah, I bring a mic with me just in case, because that would be priority.
Forget
insurance calls. Forget, you know, hospital visits. Fan morning show.
Speaking of smoke, I was listening to a new Drake album on the way in.
Can you explain that segue before you talk about?
Like fire, smoke.
Okay.
hot new album release.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of fallen off of waiting up. Oh, I've never waited up for an album release, I mean. But this morning I listen to like one of our post-game pods in the morning, but we didn't have any post-game pods this morning because no Leafs and Raptors. So I thought, instead of listening to Leafs talk with J.D. Bunkus on the morning walk or Raptors Reaction Pod, I'll take a look at what's new on the music services.
Right.
So listen to new Drake. It's fine.
Didn't fire you up?
I don't know. It kind of feels like he's falling off a bit.
I saw very little reaction, but it was mostly positive. So you might be in the minority here.
I feel like you need to give an album a few listens. I haven't even finished it. My walk is like 10 minutes here.
The album, the Stay Up Till Midnight album listen thing is something that's completely missed me in my life.
It's
a big thing. Like, that's how they do it now. They garner interest.
Well,
1201.
Taylor Swift did this last week.
And it's like everybody and your mother has stayed up to listen to this at midnight. I wouldn't be into the Swift anyway. I wouldn't really be into Drake anyway. But like, if I hear the song, if I'm going to like the song, I will probably eventually hear it, and then I will just enjoy the song then.
You want to hear it on the radio,
I don't need to force it.
You want to hear it on the radio, one of our stations.
I don't move the dial off 590, so no.
Well, we do have the opportunity. Maybe Josh plays us in with a couple of those new tracks, but
we can give some instant analysis on Drizzy's.
Drizzy.
New drop.
People still call him Drizzy?
He calls himself Drizzy.
I don't think he does that anymore.
You were a big Drake.
You know what? I was a big Drake guy because I went to school in the States and he was like our pride and joy. Like, especially since when you play sports, you want to listen to Like, I was more of a rap, hip-hop, pregame listener than, like, electronic Avicii. Like, I just didn't get... I got my headphones in, mm-hmm. hood up. I'm warming up on the concourse. So right. I would listen to Drake because it was... I don't know, he's a Toronto guy. And there was, at my point of being in college, there was a couple good Drake albums out that, like, actually slapped. Like, I was in the era of having... What a Time to Be Alive. If you're reading this, is too late. Nothing Was the Same. All of that was during my college times. And they were pretty... Oh, Views. Obviously, Take Care. There's a couple good albums in that little chunk.
That was his prime.
And so
sure.
I had some stuff to jam out to, but it's not been very good lately.
I was probably in the same boat as you. Like, when I first moved to Toronto, like, I feel like that... What's the song where he's in Shoppers Drug Mart?
What?
Bad Radio. The music video. He's in Shoppers Drug Mart.
No, Started from the Bottom.
Started from the Bottom. So
they filmed that outside
the song,
my private
and just
school.
Like, oh, I live in Toronto now. And they're like, it's literally this city. This is his city. That was kind of cool where it's like mm-hmm. you see that connection. Someone's like representing
Shoppers
the city you
does
now
it
live
for
in.
You, eh?
Love Shoppers
He's in
Drug
there
Mart.
Getting his Optimum card swiped.
An objectively good video.
Speaking of this video, he filmed this outside of where I went to high school. Like, he filmed it on the...
But not in Toronto, right?
I went to private school in Toronto.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And we watched him film it. He was driving around in his car with the roof off, and I went to all-girls school.
You were in high school then?
Yeah.
Really?
We watched him filming the video out on the street.
That's hilarious.
Like, we were all like, oh my God, it's Drake! And we were watching from, like, the lawn of our school. It's a big deal. Anyway.
For someone who's, like... permanently in Toronto. I've never been like in his presence before. I've never had oh, there's Drake moment. He's hiding in that mansion of his.
That's right.
It's actually remarkable how accessible his property is.
Oh, you,
like
you,
I know there's
you just
probably,
drive by
there's probably
it.
Armored vehicles like ready at any time, but you just, yeah, that's Drake's house.
Head up to the bridal path. That's yeah. a humbling experience.
It is a little bit.
I once did that with some of my friends when we were in high school because it was like we all found out where he lived. Well, the whole world knew where he lived, and we were right. driving down the bridle path in like a 1996 Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
They knew we were lost, I'll tell you that. Anyway.
It's too much responsibility, a house like that.
I don't think he takes care of it. I think he wakes up and is catered. He's fanned.
Do you want to live like that,
he's
though?
He's fed
honestly?
Grapes with a
do you
one
want
of
to be fed grapes?
Palm leaves.
There's a level of too much richness. It's too rich. I can eat my own grapes.
You know what? I was actually thinking about this the other day. Like, it's so nice. We can go for, like, a walk. Like, you can go to the grocery store. You can go for a walk. You can go to the ravine. You can walk your dog.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people can't do that when you're that famous. Like, you lose
know.
All
you,
the
you
simple pleasures.
You can't go
pleasures.
Anywhere with someone without someone showing you a bet slip. So.
Yeah, that's right.
You might be losing these, like, small luxuries in our life.
Me and Drake, very similar in our celebrity status in Toronto. I can't go to a Leafs game without a couple listeners.
Without some betting talk.
I did have a guy Wednesday was a Leafs game. I had a couple nice listeners come up and say, hey, we love the show. One guy came up to me and goes, why are you talking about betting so much? And I was like, yeah, you know, like, it's kind of, they did, Ontario did just get a major betting
it's a big
sponsorship.
Part of, big part of the industry now.
I said, I totally agree, man. Like, just doing what we're told.
No, but you're a passionate better.
We did lose
you're
one
just being,
last
you
night.
Were just being nice.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to tell the listeners in the 6 o'clock hour what I want to do.
It's currently the 6 o'clock
forward.
Hour.
Yeah, because Anyway, I was feeling like, so Movember and is obviously mostly visibly for the boys.
Right.
And obviously, I don't have the ability to grow a stash at this point in my life. So I wanted to find a way to contribute to Movember. Nobody's ever invited me to one of their teams, but you can do like a girl, a Mo sister. Anyway, what I've decided to do. And
you can be on my team if you want.
Okay. What I've decided to do is... for every bet that we hit on the Fan Morning Show with Wake and Rake, right, you know, every day we pick three.
Right.
Every time we hit one, I'm going to donate $5 to Movember. Just $5 because
That's your brand.
I don't got Tim McCall of money yet.
Yeah.
Just $5.
I mean, I think this is very generous. I mean, it could be, our record isn't the most dazzling.
Well,
but this is going to be a pretty solid donation by the end of it.
And if we hit the full wake and rake, I'll double it.
So double each bet or double the $15 that it would be?
Isn't that the same?
Yeah, that's the same. That's a tough look.
Anyway, so yeah, I want to contribute. So every bet we hit on the Fan Morning Show, I'm going to donate $5 to Movember, and then if we hit the full wake and rake, double it for the whole month of November. And I'm going to go back because it's the fourth now and count the first 3 days of betting. So
okay, that's great.
And
I
it's not going to change my incentive to bet good bets. Okay, I'm not going to blow this because I don't want to spend $5 on Movember.
No, you want to be spending $30 a day.
Yeah.
I will be launching my MoSpace soon. It's been a little busy week. I'm still lacking on the mustache.
What do you even do during the day?
I'm getting it all sorted out, and then I'll promo it. We'll start it next. I don't know. I don't know exactly how. Like, I'm trying to think about how much you'll donate, but I will try. I will at least find a way to make that whole as well. So I will make sure I'm matching whatever you do based on
what I
can raise and
do what you need.
Then
Justin,
I'll complete the job.
So send in your wake and rake picks now. Or
does
on
your
topic.
Money go to my MoSpace, by the way?
I don't know. You haven't invited me because you don't have one yet. So
I gotta get set.
We'll discuss. But I have a page up right now. I made it last night.
Okay, so your page, that's where it goes.
It just says, I don't know how you find it, but it just says my name, Ailish Forfar. I think if you look it up, I got a picture. I'm wearing a mustache in it. You'll find me. Well, I'm going to start today. I'm going to go back in time from this past week, pick our picks, make sure I donate. And if you want to do this with me, you can donate onto my page, but that's not what I'm asking. I'm going to do my own thing, but feel free to also follow along if you'd like. Anyway, just want to support. Want to do something for the Movember month.
I love it. We got to fire up Movember. I know, like, this feels like a little bit of like, okay, get your stuff together here, because I'm slacking. I can tell you're annoyed by the fact that I haven't done what I need to do for Movember. So this is almost going to be like pushing me as well, I feel like.
I feel like that's my whole job sometimes in the show.
Yeah.
All right. That's enough. Let's talk about the World Series. I was trying to delay it as long as possible. My Phillies really just, they're down bad right now. I'm not feeling confident. I just really wanted last night to go a certain way. Far from it.
Okay.
First of all, those Phillies jerseys are got to be top five MLB jerseys.
Let's start with the positive.
Man, those are chef's kiss.
They are beautiful. The hat is amazing.
You know what? That's what I want. I'm going to buy one of those.
I want one of those dad
hats. Jumping
on
the bandwagon.
They're very, very nice. There was a little controversy over whether or not they should have worn the jerseys, because it's like, what, you're just throwing these jerseys into a World Series randomly?
Yeah, I did think that way too.
But apparently they wear them for every home game played on Thursday. So why would you change it up when every home game played on a Thursday, you wear those jerseys? It makes perfect sense for you to just stick with that rotation, stick with what had worked throughout the season, even though it wasn't the most dominant regular season by any means for the Philadelphia Phillies. So I have zero problem with them wearing it, first of all. But even they had a reason. It wasn't like out of the blue. It was what they do on Thursdays. So I was completely fine with it. But the flip side of the jersey conversation is that the Houston Astros may be the best franchise in Major League Baseball in terms of how they're run, like the way that they fill the talent bucket up. Like, Jeremy Peña is the perfect example of what they do so brilliantly, which is, well, we groomed a shortstop who got to the point where they were making too much money. And guess what? We've got another one literally ready to go and ready to
be better.
The best player on our team. So that says everything about the Astros. But the way that which the team runs does not reflect in the niceness of their jerseys.
Awful.
Those are the worst jerseys in Major League Baseball. They are so bad. I know they're like a callback to what was before as well. And I guess you can't really fix history, but they do look slightly modernized. They are awful. And I'm not even an orange hater. Orange is fine. Orange can look great. Clemson, great. Lots of teams can work the orange.
Glad Edmonton you didn't Oilers. Say Princeton.
Edmonton Oilers have a great jersey. The Houston Astros jerseys look like the Vancouver Canucks knockoff Walmart ones that we've made fun of relentlessly. They're really, really bad.
What's worse, those or what the Tampa Bay Lightning put out last night on the ice?
Those are worse because they're your A jerseys. They're your real jerseys.
And you got to see
the Lightning
them
have
quite
good
often.
Jerseys. The Lightning, I mean, that was that is an abomination. That's like pure inline vibe where they're just goofy colors.
Not as bad as what the Buffalo Sabres put out on the ice the other day.
No, the Sabres are way better. No.
The pants and the look. The full white uniform.
I didn't mind it.
I hated it. Look at caddies out there.
The whole thing would have looked like what?
Caddies.
Oh, it would have looked better.
What do you think I said?
I don't know what I heard there. It would look better, I think, with blue pants. But, I mean, the jersey makes up for it.
They look like those...
They're going for that, like, color rush thing.
No, the cameramen who, during the Olympics, mm-hmm. go out on the ice and rip around with the camera in the background to make sure you're not seen on the broadcast. That's what the Buffalo Sabres looked like the other day.
It's fair. You can blend into the ice a little bit.
All right, anyway. So, worst jerseys versus best jerseys. Unfortunately, the worst jerseys overcame.
Yeah.
Justin Verlander guts out his very first win in the World Series.
He did it.
It was a bit tense at times. Got bases loaded. Starts off with a second pitch home run.
Yeah. Lead off homer.
He was
for
shaking in his boots for a bit, but finally got the
he
dub.
Got himself into some jams. Good old Dusty Baker didn't have to make a decision between getting a win in the World Series versus getting Justin Verlander a win in the World Series, which is a great thing. I admittedly went to bed after the Astros made it 3-1. I thought, well, there's no way. We just saw two Astros relievers overpower. Then I woke up and said saw 3-2, and I was like, okay, how'd that happen? I gotta, mm-hmm. go back and watch a little bit here. It got interesting. Were you up watching that?
Oh, yeah.
Did you think the Phillies were going to do it? Because that Phillies magic we've been talking about so much, coming back into that game, not only getting the run, but threatening, mm-hmm. forcing Montero from the game, getting Presley in, needing him to get five outs. Like, it felt like...
The end of the
game. I knew the result when I watched it, but I was like, when I actually saw what happened, like, it wasn't just a home run that left the yard. It was the Phillies were... right there and probably should have tied it.
And there was the game defining end of the game save too. There was a ball that basically touched the top of the fence and didn't go out. There's a couple little, you felt like the momentum was starting to pick up for the Phillies home field. Like it felt like the perfect storyline was coming, and maybe it has to do with the Phillies' magic this postseason so far and the mm-hmm. fact that I'm the biggest fan here in Canada of the Phillies. I believed in it. I felt it. But they didn't. Their offense is drying up at the wrong time here. They get no hit. They get, obviously, the one run, but they went 1-7, I think, in runners in scoring position, left 12 guys on base. It was starting to look like someone needs to come in here and Bryce Harper it up. They didn't get it. It did get tight at the end. I obviously was fired up about that, but nonetheless.
And two guys who are pretty important to them having a chance, at least, mm-hmm. in doing what they need to do offensively. Rhys Hoskins, Nick Castellanos doing absolutely nothing in the middle of the lineup. Like, that continues to hurt them.
Yeah.
But, like, your offense is going to dry up in a series like this one. Like, it's going to happen at times. It mm-hmm. already happened to the Astros. It's how you respond, and can you get to the next starting pitcher? The problem is this series now shifts. I think having the middle three games is actually kind of an advantage. Like, you get the series establish itself, and then all of a sudden you get three straight home games, and you can make hay during that time. Like, that's when you can establish yourself, I think, the most in a series. But you failed to get at least two out of three. Now you got to win both in Houston, and I think that's going to be a really, really difficult task. Maybe they have a slight advantage in that... You know, they have to make that decision between McCullers, Javier, are both going to go? Are they on sufficient enough rest? I'm not really sure in a game
Zach Wheeler's going to be on 6 days rest.
But Zach Wheeler and Framber Valdez are fully rested, and you have to beat Valdez now. You have to get one over on Framber Valdez, who's the king of the quality start this year, before you can get to a game seven and start asking those questions of Dusty Baker and the Astros. So I think it's going to be difficult for Philly to get that game six win. However, if my gambling record has anything to do with it, maybe they got a shot.
I just need them to win one more game so I don't lose our show bet.
Our series ends Saturday night in game six. Either way, show bet will be decided. But again, and what's more important, obviously, it's going to be tough for the Phillies to get both these in Houston.
Yeah, my confidence level is starting to trickle away. We're going to talk to John Morosi today, Charles Davis, and Pete Blackburn at 8 o'clock. But for John Morosi, you know, this guy's he's been in the grind this whole season long. I'm starting to feel like the Houston Astros, it was always inevitable, but they did get this little bit of adversity. But we talked about it after getting the no-hit, their response, that championship DNA. We talk about that in the NHL with the Tampa Bay Lightning, who proved this championship DNA. Is that the same in baseball? Like, I truly don't know, but it's showing that way. To get no-hit, to come back, to do this all on the road, mm-hmm. It's like nothing can faze these guys. They got the rookie shortstop who's making history every time he gets out there. They have the depth across all positions, bullpen, starting pitchers. Now Justin Verlander finds a way. It's just starting to be, they're going to go do this on home field. It's starting to be like, hey, this was what was always going to happen. The Phillies were fun and gritty, and they're a fun team to cheer for, but it was always the Astros.
It was always the Astros, at least it seems. When I used to think about the Astros, especially when they won in 2017 and when Springer, Correa, and all them were there, it felt like just the best lineup. And it felt like a lineup that you could just never beat. But now it seems like the strength of the team has somewhat shifted to where it's really just that pitching staff. It's what can come out of the pen. It's the four, five, mm-hmm. even six starting pitchers that they can throw at you. Because when you look at the bottom of the order, like it's kind of like they have an issue at designated hitter. Like they can't find any decent plate appearances from the designated hitter position with Mancini struggling the way he
Mancini.
Is. And they've just thrown this
that
rookie in.
That at bat was it like possibly
lost.
The worst one I've
he
seen this whole World
lost.
Series.
Somehow he almost walked. Like he drew a full count somehow, but it was really ugly from him. He did make a great defensive play to help mm-hmm. Presley get out of that jam. But they're not getting much from the bottom of the order. They're getting nothing from Altuve except the triple to start the game. Pena is kind of delivering the goods. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, and we should ask Morosi about this, is Pena the runaway MVP favorite right now? If the Astros get it done this weekend, is anyone else? Yeah. Is Presley maybe? No, probably
I think
not. I feel like it's Pena, which again says so much about the Astros and what they do that they just like create a shortstop, not mm-hmm. even create a shortstop, create a World Series MVP shortstop. And that's really the key to what they've done.
Not that I want to give the Houston Astros the World Series yet, but I think if this happens and Monday we come here and you're celebrating, I wonder how much this changes the fans and the media and casual fans' perspective of the Houston Astros, because it hasn't been great. There's been clearly a lot of judgment, rightfully so, of this organization and what they've done. I don't know how else to put it.
Well,
I wonder if this is like hopefully a clean season, a clean win. How does that change your perspective of the Astros? Like, have they earned a little bit more respect and trust in you as a fan? Are you always going to feel this way? I think that'll be interesting if they go on to win this. How we wrap up the last 5 to 6 seasons with this team, who did change a lot of their core pieces, GM, coach, or manager. Yeah, I guess that's the same thing. Yeah. And they've still found a way. They've developed some talent that nobody else did the work and found. And so maybe that changes the way you view the Houston Astros. Anyway, I don't want to have that conversation really yet, but
it changed it for me. You kind of know my stance on this. Like, I kind of like the redemption story. I think what's also undeniable is that they have changed their ways. I just said they're not the offensive team they mm-hmm. used to be. They're the pitching juggernauts. And when you're pitching, you're trying to prevent teams from cheating. There's no question they're doing it more honorably. Hey, maybe there's a system out there where they're even more sophisticated than it was before. Maybe they don't need trash cans because they've got something even better than that. But I don't look at it that way. I think they were always immensely talented. They deserved it then probably, because I feel like every team is cheating and that the Astros just got caught. But I think the way they're winning it with Baker, with the dominant pitching staff, maybe it forced them to adapt. Mm-hmm. Maybe it forced them to be even better than what they were and not even have to rely on garbage cans to win. So I feel like there is definitely a big vindication piece here. It's just up to you how you want to, reconcile with it.
Well, let's not hang their banner yet, but it's trending that direction.
Still a long way to go. Game 6 goes Philly's way.
Anything can happen.
Obviously, we're in a 50-50
scenario. I would
love
a game seven. Come on. Just like the problem is, though, I think it'd be up against Sunday Night Football.
Yeah. And then you get that really embarrassing moment as a league where a random week nine game outdraws
Chiefs and Titans.
Your one-off championship game. The Titans, one of the most boring franchises in the NFL. And obviously, Mahomes will help out that rating thing. But they will outdraw the World Series without question.
Let's get there first. Off day today in the MLB. You've got tonight your Toronto Raptors face the Mavs. You got Leafs this weekend. A massive double or back-to-back here with the Bruins and the Hurricanes, who are both looking real dangerous as of late. Let's play the clip because...
You want to start with Rupp?
Well, I think that's going to shape a lot of discourse today. Right. And it did last night. So Mike Rupp, former NHLer.
Stanley Cup champ,
went on Twitter yesterday and posted a video that has almost over a million views, I believe, at this point. Basically doing an in-depth breakdown of...
A million views is serious.
An in-depth breakdown of the skirmish that happened on the ice at the end of the Flyers-Leafs game on Wednesday night. We all remember that Gio coming in, WWE style, Michael Bunting, you know, choke slamming guys to the ice. And in all that was a defense of Auston Matthews, the Hart Trophy winner, the all-star, the face of the franchise, was not really involved in the melee, as Justin likes to put it. Yeah,
kind of just spinning around, smiling. Not much happening from Matthews there.
Right. And so there's a very lengthy analysis, including hand-drawn circles on the screen.
I love the telestrator aspect of it. Very
cut,
nice.
Forward, backwards, zoom, reverse. Honestly, it was kind of like...
I thought my phone was buffering, and it was just like him doing a very... Poor man's imitation of what you'd see on a Monday Night Football broadcast, but go ahead.
So it's a 2.5 minute clip. We have we've cut a bit of it. If you haven't seen it yet, you just go to Rupper17 on Twitter. I'm sure you've seen. It's got 750 quote tweets and 1,313 retweets. So it's out there in the stratosphere. Let's play the little breakdown clip here, and then we can discuss.
All right, I'm sure everybody's seen it to this point, but we're going to go through. Auston Matthews takes a shot by Travis Konecny, and I'm okay, and I love this, actually, that Auston goes after him, right? Goes in there, gives him a whack. You're not allowed. You can't just take a run at me, okay? And comes in, lays a cross check. That's all good. Konecny gives him a whack. Matthews gives him a whack. And then Konechny's like, all right, let's go. And Auston doesn't have to fight here. He does not have to fight here, although he's the one who kind of started this whole thing as far as going after him in the corner. But you can't just stand there and be okay with your teammates coming to your defense and you just laugh about it. We've seen this movie. I've seen this time and time again with Auston. Playing the cool card doesn't work. It doesn't float. It may scoot by. It may look cool on social media. But inside that locker room, at some point, it's going to wear thin.
Anyway, it goes on for a while.
Full breakdown.
So the question here is, did you need more from Auston Matthews in that moment? Does that connection is that this team needs more grit, and if they don't figure it out, I think at the end of the clip he says it's going to be a big problem in Toronto, and that in that locker room it will create it'll create a divide because players are going to get fed up that they have to come to Auston Matthews' defense. That's basically paraphrasing the video for you.
Well, yesterday we said we loved it, so we'd be contradicting ourselves if we changed our opinion, I think. Like we
loved the response from the team.
We thought it helped the total vibe package, if you want to put it that way, where it's like, okay, you're feeling good about this, but you're also feeling good because you just kind of had a little battle. And what happens when there's a melee and you win the melee, or at least you come out even in the melee, you feel a little good after. The adrenaline's running, everyone's kind of pumped up because you came to the defense of each other, and that's all great. So I didn't have a problem with it in the moment. I think I have more of a problem about like the philosophy of this team. Like, could you be tougher? Yeah, I'd like you to be a little bit tougher. That'd be great. But you're not. And that's really the crux of it. Because he says playing the cool card doesn't float. Well, doesn't float for who? Wouldn't float for him, maybe. Maybe if he played with Auston Matthews and Matthews did that every shift and never stood up for himself and he had to do it, yeah, then maybe that would be annoying. But here's the thing. It might bother a team full of Mike Rupps, But this is a team full of Austin Matthewses. Not that they're all the star talent that Matthews is, but they all approach these scenarios, these scrums, for the most part, in the exact same way. They kind of arrive and there's no contact, no eye contact. They're not trying to make it a thing, right? This is not what they generally want to do. They head back to the bench as soon as possible. So in the odd scenario where you do have something real, they have a few players that can step up and do something about it. And Giordano just did just that. So if Matthews is like repeatedly doing this, then yeah, it's maybe a problem. But this was an organic thing that happened in the moment. And it's not a serial thing that has become an issue. It would maybe not float if he did it over and over and over again. But this was a real response. He was actually annoyed with this player. There was a response from that player. And Giordano did what Giordano should have done in the moment, which was tidy it up.
I think the argument that was presented as well from a lot of other people is that you got a 40-year-old Giordano having to come in and clean up what the young guy has started. You know, he initiated this scuffle and he stood there and didn't partake in it. And there's like, you know, he's laughing and smiling. And the video angle that Rob had put online is it's quite evident that this fight is happening and Matthews is looking around, not partaking in anything. And then somebody approaches him to maybe have a little bit of a skirmish and he just ignores it. And so it's funny because we came on yesterday and we were fired up about this, excited. But imagine if he had got into this melee and broke his hand. Mm-hmm. We would have been like, that was so not necessary. Exactly. Austin Matthews shouldn't be the one in there fighting his own battles. Where was the rest of the team support? You know, it's irresponsible for the Hart Trophy winner to be fighting guys with a minute and a half left in the game when you're up 5-2. Completely think that would have been our narrative. Didn't happen, but I can speculate Toronto media going that route. But I will say I didn't watch this breakdown and not feel like there's a little bit of validity to this. I'm not asking Austin Matthews to go out there and drop guys and fight, but I am saying that look engaged, get a little bit more fired up about this and not just be like floating. And I haven't played hockey. I've never played in a league where you can fight, obviously, girls hockey, but I've played in scuffles where you're pissed off that guys are coming after you. You know, Konechny is a little bit of a snaky rat. I don't want you to drop the gloves against him. He did. But, you know, there's an in-between between rock 'em, sock 'em, Kipper coming on here saying, like, knock someone's teeth out and not even engaging whatsoever. But I don't agree fully with the narrative that was presented. Very interesting discourse was brought up from that video. There's a lot of different opinions on this. Love to hear from the text line.
The best result from this, honestly, would have been Matthews dropping the gloves and beating the brakes off Travis Konechny. Honestly, if we're talking about vibes, if we're talking about, hey, maybe people stop messing around with him, if you stand up for yourself and you actually fill someone in, I know it's Konechny who's much smaller, then yeah, that would have been great. And trust me, the dressing room would have been fired up if Austin Matthews absolutely embarrassed and punished Konechny for even being in his orbit. That would have been a great thing, but that's just not how he's made up. And again, to the point, this whole team doesn't really want the standard to change, I don't think. Like they don't want to be responsible for, you know, how these scrums go. They want a couple players to be involved when they need to be. They want to keep this stuff to a minimum. They don't want the standard to change. So I don't think they're sitting around thinking, oh, Austin Matthews should have done that. I think they're waiting for the moments that actually do arise organically, and then there have some people there that
can
handle
it. You always said you can't fake toughness.
You can't fake toughness. And this team, yeah, I mean, Matthews is tough enough. He just doesn't want to fight.
He was leading the team in hits to start the season, remember? Our whole conversation is Matthews looks tough as hell out there. He's throwing the body around. He had the most hits. That's a different type of toughness than having to punch someone in the face post-melee. But
I think where Rupp's coming from, and again, it's like if it was a team of Rupps, so everyone can handle themselves, except maybe a couple. But the two that can't handle themselves are starting everything. That's when it would be annoying.
There's drama in the dressing room.
Yeah, and Matthews isn't starting everything. He's reacting the few times it seems worthy of a reaction. And it, so it's not the, it's not a case where all these players are constantly having to come to the defense of someone who's acting out and can't stand up for themselves. I love what Matthews did. Again, if he filled him in, that would have been great. But I like a little anger. I like a little stick work, smile, chirp. I think that's all fine. The one thing that I would maybe criticize is going back for more and still not doing anything, because he circled back to Konechny and kept smiling and chirping, whatever. And maybe that's a little annoying, because after fighting once, you now have to fight again.
Yep.
That maybe. That would be annoying. But again, this isn't happening all the time. This is an exception to what is normally, you know, a pretty... Giordano doesn't have to do this all the time. And that's the key. This isn't like something that's happening over and over and over. And the thing that happened later on in the night, which wouldn't, in my opinion, float, is Jordan Binnington continuing to be a moron in between periods, bumping the other goalie. That's the stuff that would be annoying if you were Mike
Rupp.
Because you don't even want to stand up for him in the moment, mm-hmm. because it's the stupidest thing ever. That's the stuff that would get annoying, I think. Matthews getting a little heated in a moment and you having to jump into a scrum, that's not going to get annoying because it's not happening enough. Jordan Binnington is being a moron more than Austin Matthews is being a little fiery on the ice. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff that doesn't float. I'm sure everyone has Austin Matthews back after last night or the other night.
Okay, so I agree with a lot of what you're saying. And once again, I know the difference between dropping someone in a 5-2 game and maybe it's, you know, a tight game and you're trying to bring some energy to your bench. But a lot of the arguments are Sidney Crosby would have done something. Alex Ovechkin has a little bit of fire to him. Nate Dogg has fought. Nate Dogg shows some grit. Just because you're the star player on the team doesn't eliminate the need for you to have some passion.
Nathan MacKinnon can destroy probably half the league.
Yeah.
More than half the league.
And so that's a full, valid
But that's within
comparison.
Their skill set. It's within their skill set. You're asking Austin Matthews to be something he's not if you really want him to fight. Mm-hmm. He's never going to do it. His line mate is the tough guy, quote unquote, on his line. And you and I could not find record of Michael Bunting ever being into a fight. Like, he doesn't want to fight either. That's what I'm saying about the standard. He doesn't want to do it, but he'll get in a wrestling match for Matthews because he has to. And Giordano would do the same. I guess Giordano did eventually fight someone after that scrum. But, like, if it's not in your ability, then don't do it. And Crosby's fine. Crosby mm-hmm. can fight, but, like, you don't want that all the time.
I bet Pens fans, if this was the same situation, would have a little bit of resistance to their iconic franchise player getting in there and dropping the gloves.
I'm sure
but at the same
time, he's done it. They've not liked it.
But he has done it.
But what
but that's
the,
part
is
of
Matthews
his.
Matthews going to prove something by doing? Like, again, Matthews mm-hmm. is never going to do it. So do you want him to just be, to quote a reporter, a delicate flower in that they don't touch anyone? They just go right to the bench? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to at least. I think he did what we should want him to do when he's angry and once someone takes a shot at him, which is to use your stick, honestly, because you don't want him throwing punches and breaking his hand. You don't want him getting beaten up because he can't fight.
100%.
Like, if you can't do it, don't do it. But you got to stand up for yourself as well. So that's what he did.
I just don't like the...
You didn't have a problem with it before Mike Rupp.
I didn't have a problem with it because I didn't watch this...
So he created a problem.
This
and that's
ESPN
more a,
20 for
know,
30
so
for 30
he,
breakdown.
You bought in.
Okay.
This is proof
yesterday,
that you
no, no,
people
no, go
will
back,
criticize the Leafs for everything because we didn't care.
Go back and listen to yesterday's show. I was more fired up for what Gio and Bunting did. I don't think I ever commented on Matthews whatsoever because he started and he wasn't involved. But when I rewatched the video, I thought, get involved. Like, why are you like standing around laughing? That's what I didn't see.
I just don't
see.
Know why it's a surprise.
I guess it isn't a surprise.
Maybe it's the reoccurring. If the
nature
issue
of
is
it.
That his teammates would be annoyed by this, I think it's a non-issue. And I think it's an example of the Leafs will be criticized for everything. Matthews will be criticized if he fought. Matthews criticized for not fighting.
And we would have been a part of that. 100%. If he fought, why are you doing that? You're the superstar. You're going to injure yourself. I know how it goes. But I just, the look of it. Kind of rubbed me the wrong way
okay.
a little bit. That's
okay.
all. The text line is literally off the rails right now.
it's a polarizing thing.
And it is. And you know what? We would have been on both sides of it.
It's frustrating because if you have the God gifts that Auston Matthews has in terms of strength and size, you'd think you'd be able to at least grab on to someone and hold your own if need be.
I wanted to see a little bit of that, Justin.
That's just not him. And if you want Auston, if that's the fatal flaw, like, I think it's something you should get over. And I'm sure, despite what Mike Rupp says, that everyone in the room doesn't care that he stood around.
I agree with that. I think that's a big stretch to think that they went in the room and thought, Auston, we had to stick up for you again.
There's no chance.
And Gio, after the game, was asked all about this, and he goes, he's our star player. Like, there's no doubt in my mind I'm going out there and I'm going to crush them. It's like,
of course. Did Wayne Gretzky have to fight? Well, like, we've mentioned Crosby and Ovechkin. Did Wayne Gretzky have to fight? Did everyone in the Oilers care?
I wasn't alive during that.
Did everyone in the Oilers care about sticking up for Wayne Gretzky? No. And I'm not saying Auston Matthews is Wayne Gretzky, but he plays the Wayne Gretzky role on this team. I don't know. We've been talking about, you can't fake toughness. There are a few players who can do this. Everyone else is in Auston Matthews stand around mode. Gio, Riley, Bunting is like, it's like he's found middle.
I don't think anybody's scared of Michael Bunting.
He's found middle ground where he can just grab someone and kind of wrestle them to the ice. Like, that's what he does. So I agree that it is an issue that they are not the toughest team in the world. I feel like you have to be tough to win a Stanley Cup. But I don't want to force them into being something they're not, because it's not going to work. They've chosen a group of players that stand around.
So that is the makeup of the team, and I completely agree. We talked about this. I don't forget who we asked about the makeup, and were we surprised that Shanahan created a roster of this sort when he was a player that would have been in the melee, right? And he was a fierce competitor.
That's the great irony about this team.
And this team doesn't, we're relying on Gio, who's 40, and Michael Bunting, who doesn't really scare anybody, to be the guys that are going out there. Wayne Simmonds and Kyle Clifford, who are up in the press box, would be the other people, and they're not in the lineup. So that is what you're left with, as those guys to do the protection of your Hart Trophy winner.
And if you're Wayne Simmonds, you would like it because it's giving you a function, right? It's given you a role on this team if there are issues that you have to clean up yourself, because otherwise he can't get in the lineup. I just don't think there's a single person in the Leafs organization that didn't like Auston, like was offended by what Auston Matthews did. And that's really the point of this conversation, because Rupp suggested that everyone would be annoyed by it.
The times have certainly changed since Mike Rupp was in the NHL. And he's coming from a very different perspective, as somebody that I think got a career 90 points. And last year, Auston Matthews had over 100 points in one season.
And that was his role. So he would know when someone's taking sort of advantage of the fact that he's there. But I don't think Auston Matthews takes advantage of that.
Should I read? I'm going to go through the text line and decipher. I think there's 380 texts. Let's take a break, because we got some A-list stuff.
Pick out some good ones.
I'll pick out some good ones. We're going to celebrate a colleague who had a really nice day yesterday.
Can't wait.
It wasn't you.
Someone who has that Mark Giordano toughness.
That's right.
They jump into a scrum.
You would have got in there and dropped the gloves. That's next. The Fan Morning Show, Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
All right, we're back on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Let's do the A-list.
Now, it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, our buddy and colleague, Kevin Bieksa, yesterday signed a one-day contract with his former Vancouver Canucks. A beautiful day of celebration for him, and much well-deserved and earned. It was also against his other former team, the Ducks. And it was also on November 3rd, which is his jersey number. So this is a bit of a mystical evening for him.
Yeah.
He got a lot of really great stuff on social. So if you've got a minute to just type in Kevin BX and look at what they did to honor him, I'll give you a couple highlights. He went out with the team pregame skate or pregame practice, and he was full gear ripping around, like going hard in the drills. He's a funny guy, but like I really appreciated that he didn't just sign the contract and like he went all in. He had a great day. He like leaned into it. He looked good. You know, he's like
like he can still play.
He could still play. And maybe the Canucks need him. Anyway, so that's part one. He had a really nice media availability with that as well. Pre-game, he was in the locker room and he gave the guys a little bit of a pre-game speech, and shows like the type of leader he is. Obviously, he's well-spoken. We know that. That's his post-playing career. But I wanted to play a little bit of his locker room speech to the Canucks.
When I played, guys, I don't know what you're like, but I was like tunnel vision, like full steam ahead, next game, next season. You know, I was always thinking about like, you know, what's up, what's coming up, what am I preparing for? And I never actually like sat back and enjoyed some of the times and the experiences and the accomplishments. And then you get older and you stop playing, COVID happens. Now it's like 4 or 5 years since I've played, and you start to kind of look back and reminisce, and you're like, it was best time of my career was being a Vancouver Canuck and being in this dressing room. And like, I'm walking in here with Cole, and Cole grew up here. Like Cole and the Sedin's kids, they grew up like on the floors when they were young kids. And we have so many good memories in this room. You know, the finals, obviously, right? But winning game 7 against Chicago, and you know, the President's Trophies won back-to-back President's Trophies. A lot of great memories in here, but like a lot of tough memories here too. Right? A lot of tough losses, a lot of, you know, missed the playoffs twice in my career. And all those tough things, they make you stronger and they make you really enjoy the good times. You have to go through them, you have to get stronger, and you have to endure them.
It's a long clip. There's still a lot more about the trials and tribulations of being an NHL player, but his message in the heart of this speech, which we didn't really fully get to, was that, hey, you're going to go through it and you got to find a way to be a leader and to inspire your team. And I think it's a perfect timing for the Canucks right now. I don't know if it was a little bit of a, I'm going to go in there and actually maybe do something of relance with these guys, but just, it's a good perspective. Best times of his life, but also the hardest times of his life. And you're going to learn a lot about yourself, but you need to go in there and lead this team. And he wasn't, you know, the top point production guy, but he knew his role and he did that well, and he had a little bit of an edge to him. And I don't know, maybe there's some teams out there that need that.
Yeah, I think Vancouver needed that. I'll just say, like, that's why I take a moment after every show to just, you know, appreciate
what we had
because it could be the time of our lives here, Ailish. But yeah, Vancouver scoring 8 goals in a big victory over Anaheim. I mean, I feel like that was the message that that team might need at the exact right time.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like, again, we're a little disconnected. I don't know what's going on in that room. Clearly, there is a little bit of a drama thing, though.
Yeah.
There might be factions. We've heard about that. But sometimes you need a reminder because you get so whipped up in what your current reality is that a perspective that seems simple, if it's just driven home the right way, can change everything. And that's why coaches' messages are so important. That's why we laud leaders who stand up at certain moments. That's why it's all over movies. Like the speech, like, it can have effect on people. And if that didn't have an effect on you even in the slightest, like, I'd be surprised if you watched that whole clip. And I encourage you to do it.
They also awarded him or presented him with the stanchion that the puck hit off of in the 2011 Western Conference Final. So I don't know if people remember this, but
oh, they should.
The double OT
goal. That was easily the best part of the entire thing.
So
was that they
have,
awarded him the stanchion.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They had the same stanchion. They gave it to him,
like,
the puck.
Vancouver has its issues with putting together a hockey team, clearly. But they seem to do these things flawlessly.
Yeah.
And that they gave him that stanchion, like how they pulled that stanchion out of whatever storage container it was in or storage room it was in is unbelievable. But that's such an amazing gift and an amazing gesture. Really, really cool.
And lastly, I thought it was hilarious. They do the ceremonial puck drop and he rips the puck back. Like, he's a fun guy. I really love seeing that ceremonial puck drop instead of just grabbing it. Like, he just won it. Like, it was like OT Stanley Cup final. Take a look at all the stuff for Kevin Bieksa. Congratulations to him, colleague of ours. There's some really nice clips of people giving him his flowers and appreciating the career he had. And I think it's well deserved.
Can't wait to get Elliot's take on all that.
They did Hockey Night in Canada, or the panel. I think it was last night that we had a panel.
Oh, did they have a panel
they
last night?
They did. Everybody that was on there did a little speech, and Elliot was one of them.
I'm sure it was pretty funny.
He was like, I like to rip on Kevin, but, you know, I'll be on, like, you know, I'll give.
Oh, he was sincere?
Yeah,
I'm sure. Okay, the jokes will be on 32 Thoughts and Saturday Night.
That's right. Okay, last one quick here before we take a break. I don't know. Maybe the Arizona Coyotes are trolling us. They announced their helmet sponsors yesterday. Goodwill.
That's funny.
Goodwill, the thrift store chain, which is a wonderful nonprofit organization that employs hundreds of thousands of Americans and Canadians, will be their helmet sponsor. It is a discount company where you are you're buying secondhand items for low cost.
Right.
You're just writing the jokes at this point, though. And Goodwill, like, power, like, I think it's a wonderful thing. But sometimes I'm starting to think that maybe they're leaning into this a bit.
Yeah, I think they might be a little bit. I mean, I question milk. Like, how does milk have enough money? But I think we're learning more and more about, like, the power of farming. Not that should have been questioned at all. But how does Goodwill have the loose change around?
That was the other part I thought about.
That doesn't make sense to me. Like, that's sort of contradictory in itself. But maybe people aren't lining up to get that helmet sponsorship. I'm not really sure. It does feel like they're trolling us. I'm going to, you know, trying to pick my spots, making fun of the Arizona Coyotes. And I don't really want to jump on Goodwill, but it seems odd. And it seems intentional. We'll just leave it at that.
Well, just because also they, Mullet Arena, they leaned into that and they gave everybody mullets on night one. And I loved that. I thought, okay, if you're going to have this type of
season. And it's
season,
not named after the hair, right? It's named after
it's
someone.
The donors
or something.
So you lean into that. I think that was funny. And now a couple days later, you have Goodwill as your helmet sponsor. It's just getting a little.
Scotty Wedgwood nearly had a shout out for you last night.
I know. Just $5. Okay. I got a couple more we'll do throughout the show, including a massive professional sports scandal that I'll have to bring to light, just like the fishing scandal. This one might be similar in nature, but we're going to take a break because we got our guy, Charles Davis, who I missed last Friday. I've missed the rich timbre of his voice, and I can't wait to speak with him momentarily. That's next in the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.